This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
Britain is broken. Britain does need reform. You know, many people probably listen to this podcast would agree with me that the direction under the Tories and now under Labour is going in the wrong direction. And I think, you know, Nigel is the greatest Briton since Winston Churchill, and he alone can save this country and hopefully put it in the right direction.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast.
In this week's episode, have thousands of traffic fines in Medway been issued by mistake? Latest Office for National Statistics figures show the changing face of Kent, and we take a look back at 2025 and have a go at predicting what will happen in 2026. I'm Nikki White, Senior News Editor at the KM Media Group, and I'm joined by Robert Boddy, who reports on Medway Council.
Hello.
And Dan Essen, who covers borough and district councils.
Hello.
This week's guest is Reform County Councillor Maxwell Harrison, who represents Sheppey at County Hall. I'm in the hot seat this week, standing in for regular host Simon Finlay, who's away. First up though, Rob, what have you been looking at?
So we've talked before about the School Street scheme in Medway and its expanded rollout, as well as some of the opposition from some groups. Well, this week I spoke with a man who was fined on the Richmond Road School Street in Gillingham, but successfully got it overturned by an independent adjudicator who said the signage was insufficient, meaning thousands of fines could possibly have been issued in error. Chris Lee turned onto Richmond Road from Saunders Street and then drove about 200 yards before entering the pedestrianised zone. However, he said he hadn't been made aware of the restrictions until it was too late, as once on Richmond Road, there's no opportunity to turn off or turn around. He appealed to Medway Council, who rejected it, but he took it a step further and took it to a tribunal where independent adjudicators overturned it.
So what did they say?
They agreed with Mr. Lee that the signs were insufficient, as the one on the junction between Richmond Road and Saunders Street is at an angle where it's not really easily seen from where he was coming from. You can see exactly what I mean on the story on Kent Online. The sign is fine to see if you're driving towards Richmond Road, but if you're turning into it, it's pretty difficult to see, especially if you're more focused on the busy traffic, which is often on that road. So Mr. Lee got his fine overturned, but this school street is the one which often issues the greatest number of all of them, the 12 across the Medway towns. However, a council spokesperson said, quote, "We have successfully defended a number of appeals at this location, and this is the first in which an adjudicator has found against us on signage grounds. While we will review the adjudicator's decision, we remain satisfied that signage at this site is adequate and compliant with the relevant legal standards."
Thanks, Rob. What have you been looking at, Dan?
So in a bit of an end of year treat, I've had a bit of a change of pace by getting very deep into the ONS's intra-British migration statistics. I spent an extraordinarily long time sorting data in an effort to work out which local authority areas in Kent have the highest level of inward migration from other parts of the UK and how many of those come from London.
And what did you find out?
So interestingly, the districts found with the highest number of overall people moving in over the period 2011 to 2024 is Canterbury, with about 195,000 people moving in. Needless to say, these figures are all offset by outward migration from those places to elsewhere, and also deaths and stuff. So, you know, the population of Canterbury has not grown by almost 200,000 in 10 years. But behind Canterbury was Medway, with about 184,000 people moving in since 2011. But when you look at the proportion of people moving into each area from London, it's very different. Perhaps unsurprisingly, Dartford has the highest proportion of people coming from London, with 60% of all of the 108,000 people who've moved there in that period coming from London. Behind that's Maidstone, at about 45% of people coming in from London. And in East Kent, it's Folkestone Hive, with the highest amount of DFLs, as they call them in East Kent, about 38%, which is even higher than the amount in Medway, despite Medway's sort of superior transport links to London. Though all these figures, I think, probably won't be too surprising to people familiar with those areas and the way in which they've changed in the past decade or so.
So where was the lowest?
I can't say it surprised me very much, but it's my benighted hometown of Dover. Over the whole 2011 to 2024 period, Dover had by far the lowest level of inward immigration at only 75,000 people, and also by far the lowest proportion of Londoners at only about 16.5%. Ever since I was growing up in Dover, people always used to say that and like to believe that as Folkestone becomes too expensive, people will eventually end up moving to Dover. You know, young, wealthier people will be priced out of Deal or Folkestone and move to Dover, and Dover will develop a sort of cultural scene and nice businesses and that sort of thing. I think this data shows if that is happening, it certainly isn't happening yet.
Thanks, Dan.
So Nikki, what's caught your eye this week?
Well, it's a particularly poignant time of year to be thinking of others, and especially those who are struggling. And I've been looking at a piece Sittingbourne and Sheppey MP Kevin McKenna wrote for us this week on why the lifting of the two-child benefit cap is so important. Now, in Kevin's constituency, a third of children are growing up in poverty. And he says that reality has lasting consequences with many of them, because they're going to end up suffering poorer health, not doing as well at school as others. And that in turn can lead to fewer opportunities in the world of work later in life.
It's quite a sobering thought, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, as Kevin says, parenting is hard, unpaid work. And he believes that lifting the two-child benefit cap really recognises that. He says that in most of these families, parents are actually in employment, much to popular belief that they're not. And they're juggling full-time jobs alongside the pressures of raising children, yet are still struggling to make ends meet. And until there's a proper pay in work, they need extra help. Now, some will argue that having more than two children is the problem, and people should think twice before having a third, fourth, or more child. But Kevin disagrees. He says, and I quote, "Choosing to have a third child or more isn't a luxury. It's taking on the greatest responsibility there is, raising the next generation."
And he speaks from personal experience, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. Kevin was one of five children and his parents had multiple jobs just to get by. But he says the extra support his mum got at that time was vital. It's a really passionate read and you can find it on our MP's column page at Kent Online if you want to have a look.
So is there anything else that's caught your eye this week?
Yeah, well, it's taken me a while, but I've finally managed to steer the Politics Podcast onto one of my favourite subjects, and that's beer. I'm lucky enough to have some really good pubs right on my doorstep, but also within an hour or so's walk, I can get to the Moot Brewery, which is at Upper Halling. Now, it's a tap room that was set up by a group of friends a couple of years ago, which we've covered on Kent Online, but it's going from strength to strength with different beers available every week. There's some fantastic visiting food trucks that pop up there, and there's also a cracking butchers and a bakery sharing the same yard. Now, one of their beers is being served up on tap at the House of Commons over the festive period, and that's all thanks to Rochester and Strood MP Lauren Edwards, who's also a fan. Now, getting Moot this slot in the Westminster Bar is fantastic, but as Lauren said, supporting independent breweries is about backing local jobs and the local visitor economy too, and I for one can definitely get behind that.
Is there a topic that you would like to be discussed on the Kent Politics Podcast? Perhaps you've got a question for one of our panel, or you'd like to comment on a hot topic in local or national government. Get in touch by emailing or sending a voice note to kentpoliticspodcast@thekmgroup.co.uk.
Our guest this week is one of the youngest county councillors in Kent, Maxwell Harrison, and he's also one of the county council members for Sheppey at KCC. A member of Reform UK, he's also been considered something of one to watch in local politics. Maxwell, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you ever so much for having me on. It's a great pleasure.
How are you doing?
No, I'm very well, thank you. Looking forward to the Christmas season, maybe having a little bit of a holiday and relaxing, but no, all good, thank you very much.
Obviously, as I mentioned, you're pretty young for a councillor. It's not that unusual for young people who are quite politicised to have sort of moved around between political parties quite a bit these days. Were you ever involved with other parties before you joined Reform?
No, I've only ever been a member of Reform UK. I voted Conservatives in 2019, like many other people, but was totally disenfranchised. And I gave up on the Conservative Party. I've always been inspired by Nigel Farage, and I'm delighted to be part of the movement to get him into number 10.
So obviously the reason why Reform has been the big story in Kent this year is because in May, you know, decades of Conservative hegemony, pretty much permanent Tory dominance of the county council since it was created in the 70s, was ended by a massive Reform landslide. Since then, though, you've lost 9 of the 57 Reform councillors elected to various factional disputes, defections and expulsions, such as those pertaining to the leaked video of Lyndon and Kemp-Caron. A lot of critics point to this kind of thing and are saying, you know, this is the chaos you get if you vote for Reform UK. What do you say of critics who think it's not been a very good 6 months in office?
Well, I say it's nonsense. You know, we've reduced the debt by £67 million. We've commenced implementation of a £67 million investment into our road repairs, which has already seen 22,000 potholes repaired, you know, carried out 350,000 square metres of road patching. And that's just the very, very thing of it. So, no, I don't buy into any of the nonsense about the conduct of a handful of councillors. I know it's been of a great media attention, but I'm delighted that ordinary, you know, voters in Kent are ignoring it and consider that we're getting on with the job at hand.
Like I say, obviously you've lost something like 9 councillors in less than as many months to all of these kinds of disciplinary problems. At the current rate of attrition, if you continue losing people this fast, Reform would lose the majority on KCC pretty solidly by the end of next year. Do you think there's a real risk of that happening?
No, of course not. I think the only form of governance in the United Kingdom that's going to struggle next year is, of course, the Labour government. If you take the polling as of today, you know, only 11% of the British public actually are in favour of Keir Starmer's government. And even in one poll, you know, they're now 10% in Wales after having been there for, you know, 26 years. So, no, I'm absolutely confident we're going to retain our majority for the entire term until the next elections here in Kent. And I think any such commentary is a little bit silly.
So, like I say, you're one of the members for Sheppey, but there's obviously two of you. Originally, you were both Reform councillors, and I understand your fellow Sheppey councillor, Isabella Kemp, who also a unusually young councillor, because obviously it's not that normal for people in their 20s to be on a council. She was also an employee of the party, much like yourself, but she was booted out in November for allegedly being involved in setting up the WhatsApp group involved in the leaking of that video of Lyndon Kemp-Caron. That must have been quite a blow to have your fellow Sheppey councillor kicked out from the party.
I think it's a blow to lose anyone in the party. And, you know, the people whom got elected back in May got a mandate from the people to represent them as Reform UK representatives. And I think it's sad that many, many thousands of people in Kent no longer either have full representation from Reform UK councillors or none at all. You know, I wish all those who are no longer in our ranks the very best, you know, and that's a genuine thing. And, you know, we're all here to serve the residents of Kent. And what has ever happened in the past is in the past. And yeah, we look forward.
You work for Reform as well, if I'm not mistaken. So you work for Reform, you're a Reform councillor. You must be pretty much up to your eyeballs in politics all day, every day. Surely it's been pretty grueling with all of the not only policy issues, but the sort of political fights that have happened this year.
Look, I got into politics for two reasons. You know, I got a heart condition from the COVID-19 vaccination back in 2021, you know, after having been a ballroom dancer for 20 years of my life, I lost, you know, my entire dreams, everything I'd been working towards. And I had never had any help, never had any support, and I was abandoned by the state and elected representatives. And that's why I put myself forward for local government and in the general election in 2024. And the second reason I put myself forward for in politics is because I want to get Nigel Farage into number 10. And it's going to be, you know, a long, hard task. No one says it's ever going to be easy, overturning the political establishment, you know, the media. Britain is broken. Britain does need reform. You know, many people probably listening to this podcast would agree with me that the direction under the Tories and now under Labour is going in the wrong direction. And I think, you know, Nigel is the greatest Briton since Winston Churchill, and he alone can save this country and hopefully put it in the right direction.
Reform's often criticised for basically being a one-man band and something of a personality cult around Nigel Farage. Do you think it's healthy that the only meaningful alternative to a very unpopular long-term duopoly of Labour and the Tories in this country is basically just built around one man who in his previous parties has something of a track record for not cooperating very well with others? You know, you say he's the greatest Briton since Winston Churchill, but he's, you know, Reform is pretty much his first major political success, or at least chance of being the Prime Minister. You know, surely this isn't a healthy dynamic for a political party.
Well, again, I disagree with yourself. And, you know, to those in the media class, if they go out and speak to residents, like, for example, on the Isle of Sheppey, you know, they adore you, Nigel, because unlike many, you know, politicians who have been around the last few decades, he's a man of conviction. He's stood behind his principles. He got us the Brexit vote and helped us win. You know, so he is the most influential politician probably in my lifetime and the lifetime of many others. And, you know, we are starting to assemble a very strong team around him. If you look at Yusuf, you know, Zia Yusuf, Danny Kruger, you know, Richard Tice, Lee Anderson, you know, we are opening our arms up to have a very, very successful and influential team. I'm sure when it comes around to the next general election, we will have a very, very strong field of candidates to form the next government of the United Kingdom and turn the ship around. So, no, I'm not going to apologise for the fact Nigel's incredibly popular. You know, it changes to someone like Keir Starmer, who is the most disliked Prime Minister in the history of our country. But, no, it's not a one-man band. We've got a great team around Nigel, and long may it continue.
I mean, I wouldn't dispute Nigel Farage is extraordinarily popular, but do you actually think Reform could survive without him?
I think the state of the country is quite clear. The people have had enough of both the Conservative and the Labour, you know, Labour Party. You know, even, you know, credit to the Greens. You know, they're up on the rise in the polls, and that's because they've got a charismatic leader. I may not agree with what he says, but, you know, that shows you that something's changing. That this duopoly in British politics is no longer the main thing. We have five main political parties in the country now. And, you know, once Nigel has been prime minister, I'm sure there will be future leadership contenders. But by that time, I don't believe either the Labour Party or the Conservative Party will be alive.
Like I said, you voted Conservative in 2019 and felt let down by them and ended up joining Reform. We know many, many people who not only formerly voted Tory and now vote Reform, but former Tory members and now join Reform. Many even former MPs, for example, Adam Holloway, the former Gravesham MP in Kent. Is there not a risk that Reform just ends up being colonised by failed Tory careerists whose very failure is what led to the rise of Reform in the first place?
No, absolutely not. We're never going to be Tory 2.0. We're a grassroots movement. I mean, I'd encourage you to come to one of our local branch meetings, maybe in Citybourne and Sheppey. It's very clear that local members have a very strong representative voice in those branches. And, you know, we want to welcome experience and talent where it is. Tory MPs who have our same values and get behind Nigel are more than welcome. But no, we will not become a Tory 2.0. Absolutely not.
There's a lot of people, as you'll be aware, especially on the left in this country, who basically think that Reform is the thin end of the wedge for a much more extreme right-wing and anti-immigration politics. For example, last week we had a council office in Kent vandalised due to the discontent of a small minority about debate on asylum seekers. How do you see Reform's relationship with, while it's a very small movement, there is clearly a quite extreme right-wing politics which is nascent in sort of protests in this country?
Intolerance of other people's beliefs or people of different skin colours is not welcome in Reform UK. I mean, Mike Nigel's made it very clear at conference, you know, we don't care about people's skin colour or their orientation or who they love or who they marry. What actually defines a person is their character, their conviction and whether they contribute within society. So no, extremists will never be allowed into Reform UK. We are a progressive centre-right party in British politics and we're sensible, and that's why we've got over 31% of the British public support at this moment in time.
Part of Reform's, I think we'd probably agree, part of the reason why Reform is so popular is because it doesn't look and sound anything like other political parties. Most members of the public are really quite repulsed by the cookie-cutter, formulaic party line parroting of the sort of duopoly of Labour and the Tories, which is clearly now very unpopular. But some people would say that basically people like you are exactly the kind of people who already dominate politics in this country. Privately educated, went to university, ambitious, professionally worked in politics, highly educated, that sort of thing. What do you think? Do you really think a movement of people like you who just so happen to believe the right thing can change this country?
Well, look, first and foremost, I'm a ballroom dancer. I mean, that's a very kind introduction about me. I went to school on a scholarship, which, you know, I had to work damn hard for. And I tell you what, you know, we weren't having, you know, holidays every single year as a family. So I don't think that's a right or fair representation. You know, I'm a ballroom dancer who had a heart condition from a vaccination, which was claimed to be 100% effective, which we know it wasn't because I'm proof in the pudding. And I've been inspired to try and help and represent and change people's lives. I think that's the sort of people who should be going into politics, not those who, you know, went to Oxford, studied PPL, or maybe human rights lawyers who are totally out of touch with the British public.
Did you not study law?
No, I did, but I was totally repulsed by the environment and the way those in the legal profession view ordinary working people. So yeah, I studied law, but I was totally repulsed by it.
Lastly, I think it's worth saying the British electorate seemed to be pretty rapidly burning through political parties. You know, Brexit did pretty much terminal damage to the Conservatives and Labour, I think. And the Labour Party now form perhaps the most unpopular government since universal suffrage. Do you think if Reform UK wins the next general election, it will survive a decade?
I hope so. You know, we have to be ambitious with our plans to make sure that this country works for ordinary working people, that the British people are put at the front of the queue in their own country. So, no, I would hope so. You know, why put all this effort, energy and time to just have a one-term government? You know, I think it's quite clear, you know, that it's going to take probably a decade to reverse the damage that has been done to this country. And I think it's quite fundamentally clear that, you know, with the right lineage, with the right grassroots infrastructure, Reform UK can win multiple general elections and ensure that the good work done in our first time in government can continue to a second or a third.
Councillor Maxwell Harrison, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much indeed.
Well, that was a year that was, with Reform taking control of KCC and the Labour government sinking in the polls. It's been a big year for this podcast, with some great discussions and fascinating guests. We're welcoming in editor Matt Ramsden to talk personal highlights and predictions.
Hi, Nikki.
But first, Dan, what's been a highlight for you?
I think it kind of goes without saying that it's the big Kent political story of the year. It was the most fun to cover, and it's given us endless work ever since, as the election of Reform to KCC taking control back in May. I like an election, pretty much full stop. And it was the more radical the change, more interesting it is to cover. And watching the election take place, I was in Dover on the day, and watching throughout the day, literally decades of Conservative hegemony in Kent just be pretty much wiped off the face of the map, and seeing all the different responses to it was politically interesting, quite entertaining, and very good fun to write about.
It's quite a historic moment, wasn't it?
Yes, and it's I've long suspected that the hegemony of the existing parties is falling to pieces, and it's interesting to see it play out in real time. And ever since then, I think what's quite interesting is that the response of the remaining opposition parties on KCC, the Lib Dems, the Greens, and Labour in particular, the parties of the left, the way in which they've carried themselves over the course of the year, I think has been the most interesting thing to watch, because I'm sure journalists elsewhere in the country who have seen Reform take over their county councils may have had similar experience, but the really, really incessant party political attacks, which is fine because that's what they do, but the endless press releases from Greens and Labour and Liberal Democrats saying Reform Councillor does this, Reform Councillor does that, are they fit to govern, are they, you know, uniquely temperamentally unsuited for government, I think has been interesting to show that Reform is what people thought it is. It is the party which genuinely terrifies all existing British political parties more than their previous opponents in the form of the Tories ever did. And it's been fun to watch a small part of a pretty serious major political and historic change, which has been decades in the making, come to a head in Kent.
Yeah, it really does seem to have ramped up, doesn't it? So what about you, Robert? What has caught your eye over the year?
Well, it's been a pretty big year for Medway in terms of lots of things that have sort of rumbled on for years and years and years have actually are finally coming to pass. I mean, a major one, which is quite, you know, sort of nuts and boltsy, is that Medway is submitting its local plan to the government. They haven't had one since 2003. They tried in 2018 and various other times. So they finally got to that point of putting this thing, which is sort of plagued people, and people complain about housing developments and all that sort of thing, and the big excuse all the time is we don't have a local plan and that's why that's happening. Part of that was another big story, which was Chatham Docks, because the reason it fell apart before was because of the Chatham Docks and what to do with it, should it stay as it is. And we've heard that, you know, last couple of weeks ago that Kelly Toher said that basically the ArcelorMittal Kent Wire, who are sort of the main people sort of fighting back against Peel Ports and their development, have kind of given up basically, and it's going to be for housing, which is sort of a big development. Of course, we had LGR and all the developments and all the craziness and the various plans which are all going through. You know, will we have one council, or will we have four or five or however many? We don't know. But from the podcast, I think we had some really interesting interviews this year. Lauren Edwards came on, the MP for Rochester and Strood, who was her first media appearance talking about just after the election in 2024 when she, you know, became an MP, and then some historic tweets of hers came, resurfaced, and it was, you know, she basically went to ground for a long time. She came on and spoke about them, and I thought that was really interesting. But then also, as Dan says about Reform taking over KCC, we've also had ex-leaders. Roger Gough came on and talked about, he came on sort of immediately afterwards talking about the challenges that Reform will face, and then more recently to sort of give his assessment of what's happened since. And similarly, we had Alan Jarrett, who was voted out of Medway in 2023, and he gave his perspectives, some of which was you know, a bit more point scorey and a bit more score settling than maybe Roger Gough did. But you know, I think it's been a really interesting year.
Yeah, it definitely has. And what about you, Matt?
Yeah, I totally agree with Rob and Dan there on the points they made. One of my biggest bugbears going back years and years are politicians who are beige and don't really say anything that interesting. They stick to talking points. They go out of their way not to be offensive at all. And we've had quite a few people on the podcast, like Alan Jarrett that Rob just mentioned, who've actually had an opinion and actually, you know, they're stuck by what they believe in. And I thought that's been really great. Someone that jumps out straight away in that sense is Anna Widdicombe, who former Maidstone MP, who now lives down in the West Country. And we gave her a call to see if she'd come on to talk about her membership reform, and she did that, and I thought she was a really good value. Just every straight question she was asked, she answered perfectly well. Someone else that I thought was excellent on the podcast was not a politician, actually. It was Colonel Tim Collins, the former Iraq war soldier, who's done lots of very interesting things during his lifetime, his career. And he came on and he was talking about immigration, and I thought he made some really, really interesting points there. So that was great. But I've got to say my favourite podcast of the year was Vince Maple versus Lyndon Kim Karen. our first ever two-headed guest slot, and it didn't disappoint, because we beforehand we wondered how it's going to go, and whether they would get along. They didn't get along, it's fair to say, and it made for fantastic listening.
Yeah, it was certainly popular with our listeners, wasn't it?
It was. It did very well in terms of downloads. But again, just two people who have their own worldview and not afraid to talk about it, and I just thought it was fantastic.
Excellent.
So what about you, Nikki?
It's been quite a turbulent year, hasn't it? There's lots to look back on. But you talk about the things that certainly the debates between Lyndon and Vince, but I think with all that we've seen, lots of arguments and backbiting, but looking back for me, the thing that I love most was seeing all of our county's MPs getting on board with our blue badge battle. I mean, politics is always going to be about debate and differing opinions, but sometimes there are things that are just so important. You want your MPs to put the politics aside, and this was a prime example. I mean, the fact that people with short-term but serious mobility issues are still being denied access to a blue badge, making life just that little bit easier for them when they need a helping hand. I mean, for me, it's just simply unacceptable. Now, it wasn't a simple task, but all of our MPs got on board with the idea fairly quickly because they could see the benefits for so many of their constituents. Now, it's frustrating that we're still trying to convince those in charge that this is something that's really needed, but the likes of Maidstone MP Helen Grant, who was on board from the very start, she'll keep campaigning with us, I'm sure, and fingers crossed we're going to get somewhere. But looking back over some of the stories that we've covered, I have to say my most favourite story of the year was one Rob covered, and that involved a man with a dream, a council, and a 20-foot long fiberglass elephant with a slide. The photos of Trevor Robinson posing on top of the play equipment on his driveway were a sight to behold. If you don't remember this story, then please look it back up online. We often get calls from people who are fed up with the council for one reason or another, but this was a pure gem. So when Trev phoned up complaining that Medway Council had taken away his elephant, which they actually thought had been taken to landfill after it was removed for safety reasons from the Strand, well, that was just purely a wonderful day. For me, the whole saga was a joy from start to finish, from Trevor convincing a council contractor to drop it off at his home rather than taking it to the tip, to his neighbours who then said that they were fed up with looking out of their window at an 8-foot elephant, which, you know, you think it's fun to have on your driveway, but, you know, in reality, probably not. I think it would be a long time before we beat that one for any quirkiness.
Yeah, so Rob, whatever you do, wherever you go in journalism, you always have the 20-foot fiberglass elephant. Too.
Whenever somebody asks me what's the strangest story you've ever covered, I'll have that in the back pocket always.
Absolutely. So guys, as 2025 draws to a close, I want you to look into your crystal ball and give me some predictions for next year. Rob, what's going to happen?
Well, I mean, there's so many different options. I think the big question will be around the local elections next year and what sort of impact that has for Keir Starmer. Mainly, well, obviously he's the Prime Minister, and so the biggest consequence will be for him. I think the biggest obstacle to unseating him, because I think kind of if the polls continue as they are, which they've done for quite a long time now, he will be on very shaky ground because Labour will lose quite a bit. Whether he goes, I think, will largely depend on if there is an heir apparent, somebody to replace him. Without that, I can see a version of events where basically he is just kept on and survives, and he's, you know, they just can't get rid of him, basically. I don't think that would be because he, you know, makes some change or, you know, becomes suddenly amazing. I think it would just be because nobody else can step into the role. I think what might be interesting is how Reform do in that, because there is an assumption that they're going to do amazingly and they're really going to take these seats. If they don't, what happens then? You know, because we've seen in relatively recent weeks, there's been a little bit of stalling around sort of their message. I mean, particularly here in Kent, the sheen of the new Reform victory that was in May has kind of come off now, I think. So if that continues, the message at the moment is Reform just can't not win. But if it keeps going this way, is it going to be a case of, well, actually, is their victory so certain? And do they lose a bit of that momentum? So I could see a version of it, again, a version of events where that happens, but I couldn't say for certain.
Just going back to Starmer and Labour, say that we get to May, the local elections are a disaster and they move against him, or he falls on his sword. Who comes next?
My money would be on Angela Rayner, I think, personally. I think she's had experience in the government, and I think she's a very competent, from what I hear, she's a very competent minister. She gets things done and is very sort of dynamic and you know, doesn't take no for an answer, basically. I think she's quite popular with the party membership. She's also been outside of the government for long enough now, and, you know, depending on your view of why she was removed, I think certain people think that she was treated unfairly in that situation. Other people presumably don't. But I think she's a strong personality, and I think she would be a relatively decently unifying figure. You know, someone like Wes Streeting, for example, who is another sort of leadership contender. Some people really like him. A lot of people really don't like him. Whereas I think Angela Rayner, even if you necessarily don't agree with 100% of her politics, and you know, a large chunk of the Labour membership do, who would be deciding this, I think even if you don't agree with her on certain things, you can sort of accept that she is quite an impressive person based on her background and sort of the fight that she's had to get to where she is. So I think even if you don't 100% agree with her, you can go, yeah, but she'd be a decent leader. And that's really what the Labour Party needs.
Okay, thanks, Rob. Dan, what about you? What's next year going to bring us?
Well, obviously, I'll continue to bang my aforementioned drum that about the unravelling of the existing party system in British politics. That even if they manage to engineer some replacement, the Labour Party, the National Labour Government, will appear ever more besieged and beleaguered. I think there's basically nothing they could do short of a miracle to make themselves look like a popular government, because they're not. They weren't popular when they're elected, and they won't be by the time they probably lose the next general election. But in terms of something more immediately verifiable, I think given the current rate of attrition, the loss of Reform members at KCC, you know, they've got 57 seats in the election in May and they're now down to 48. Given the current rate of attrition, if you just go by averages, they will lose control of the county council next year. I don't think that's guaranteed, but I think there's quite a significant chance of it. Obviously, they will they'll do everything they can to engineer some kind of functional majority, even if they technically, the council went to no overall control and they were not down to 41 seats or below, meaning they no longer had a majority. But I think there's clearly enough factionalism and bad blood in the party that they will find many, many different ways of splitting. I don't imagine it will be free of controversy and personal drama, as these things are often fueled by even more than politics. And ultimately, that will be to their detriment, because all of the other parties will, any possible signs of chaos and discord within a Reform administration, the other parties will capitalise on and attempt to use it to prove that Reform are uniquely unsuited to government and this kind of thing, which isn't, you know, may not be a fair criticism, but it will it won't do Reform any good, because all they need to do is basically just keep a hand on the tiller and look like they can govern things relatively competently, and they will pretty much overturn.
Okay, thanks, Dan. Nikki, what about you?
I think the next year we're going to see things ramping up as LGR draws ever closer. And I think you're probably going to see far more of our MPs banging the drum for their party's representatives at a local level. So just really trying to help raise their profile. I still don't really think that the public has got their heads around what LGR means, and possibly don't even care, which when it comes to the ballot box is even more dangerous. But every MP is going to want to see their party heavily representative in the new unitary authorities. So I think we're going to see a lot more fat canvassing and pushing of success stories at that local level, and what each party can bring to the table when the elections finally come. So before we go, just a bit about us and the future of the podcast. Matt, you have some news.
Yeah, that's right. So we're fast approaching our 100th episode of the Kent Politics podcast, and we're going to be having a bit of a relaunch. That's going to be where we split the show into two different formats, a bite-sized pod hosted by yourself, Nikki, and then we'll have a bumper show where we have all the usual hosts in, and we'll have a couple of guests who come in and debate the big stories of the month. So the bite-sized edition will be the first 3 weeks of the month, and the bumper edition will be the final edition of the month. And yeah, it's going to be great.
It sounds great. When does it all start?
So the first bite-sized edition will be out on January the 16th, and the first bumper edition will be January the 30th.
Okay, that's your lot for this week. Thanks to Matt, Dan and Robert for their contributions, and to our special guest this week, Councillor Maxwell Harrison. Don't forget to keep an eye on Kent Online for the latest politics coverage. You can also sign up to our politics briefing newsletter by visiting kentonline.co.uk/newsletters. And don't miss KMTV's politics show. That's every Friday at 5pm. From all of us at the Kent Politics Podcast, have a very Merry Christmas and a wonderful New Year, and we'll see you in 2026.
Thanks for listening to the Kent Politics Podcast. Don't forget to check out stories throughout the week on the politics page of Kent Online. And you can watch the Kent Politics Show on KMTV every Friday at 5pm or on demand at kmtv.co.uk.
This has been an I Am Listening original podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.